the electoral ritual is a strange one. You have to say 24 hours on 24 hours that you are the best. And that's stupid. And in the last campaign for presidency, there was a very elementary idea, just to have publicity for Santos on one face of the paper and ours on the other. And people in my team, well, myself, I didn't ask them to evaluate seriously in a formal meeting. But from an aesthetical point of view and philosophical point of view, it would be a very strong thing, very elementary. I do not make propaganda for me without making propaganda for you. And so I induce equality in the publicity resources. So indirectly, I'm saying you have 10 times more money than myself, but I spend my money better than you. The same paper serves twice.
Yeah. I'm interested in these many lives and identities that you have had as educator, as mayor. I know this is maybe a reductive way to think about it. When you were mayor, was the city a classroom? Were you approaching the city pedagogically and civic imagination from a pedagogical perspective? Was the metaphor of the classroom an operative metaphor as mayor?
Yes. The main director in the Cultura Ciudadana program, citizenships, culture, Paul Bromberg was saying, I see the city as a lab. And myself as him, I see it as a classroom. Well, he insists on engineering. I have some kind of magic faith in communicative processes. Many times I have been saved by a person who was passing through and entered in the discussion by serendipity. The day I decided that I would enter in the politics world, clearly, I had a pedagogical argument. I said, I define my life in terms of how much can I teach, and teaching to a city of 7 million people is too attractive to resist as a sort of big temptation. Well, I was very careful for not making too much pedagogy inside my team. So we invented things to translate to common language, main ideas that we had worked from pedagogical point of view. For example, the cards, the original idea of the cards was an eye on one side with the legend I see you, and the other eye, an ear, saying I hear you. And it was supposed I show you the eye, you feel some guilt or you feel some shame, and if you want, you can show me the card saying, I received your message, I hear you.
And so when these are distributed, these cards in the city to the citizens of Bogota, it's not so much about a discourse of surveillance, it's rather about a discourse of sincerity. Like, how would you explain?
One idea is that any human being has the right to make judgments about anyone. And judgments can be friendly and can be friendly communicated. And I remember also I was invited once by the generals of the Colombian army to go to the Baños Turcos.
Or the Turkish baths.
The Turkish baths. We were looking one each other as humanity, as without uniforms. We all feel alike. It's a sort of very elementary common ground. When I took my first course with Basil Bernstein, the main idea that I learned, very elementary idea, if you have a very strong boundary around the group, you can grow a lot the solidarity inside the group at the cost of demonizing the outsiders, the other. So my idea is, how could we identify the other in such a manner that we conserve the solidarity, but without condemning some part of humanity? Mm-hmm. Perhaps the ecological crisis will do that. When the planet is at risk, and you understand that you cannot find a solution for yourself alone.
You're speaking about the tendency, the all too easy tendency to demonize the other. But it's interesting because I would typically think of this within the scale of the classroom, let's say, mm-hmm. or the scale of the interpersonal. But you are thinking of it also on the level of the city.
Yeah.
Did you have difficulty scaling this discussion to the level of a city?
The level of the city, radio, television helped a lot. Instead of having different discourses for different audiences, I tried to build this idea of citizen. Myself and my work group, we baptized ourselves Ciudadanos en Formación, citizens that are being prepared to be citizens. Mm-hmm. We are learning to be citizens. And there had been a constitutional change, a huge constitutional change in 1991 that stressed participatory democracy. Yeah. And Viva la Ciudadanía was an NGO that helped to build a good climate between the radicals and leftists around the new constitution. At a certain step, we made a very democratic elaboration of short texts, sort of one-page statement. We very proud of having participated in the change of Bogota and believing that humanity will solve its main problems by free communication. We commit ourselves to participate next year in political process in the elections, and we will begin by making 3 meetings. Once we made such a text with 1,500 persons voting, some entrepreneurs were saying that was ludics, crazy game. But I don't believe so. I think that it's a very strange experiment.
You don't call that a game. So what do you call that device? It's like a social contract? What would you call this?
We call them proclamas.
Proclamation.
Proclamation. And it began with a statement of what we had done together or one by one. Strangely, almost never we have had conflicts of you claiming that your biggest proudness motive is one and the other. On the contrary, when you read the sentence and you share your recognized virtues or logros, things that you have attained, just by remembering it, I salivate. I would like to use that methodology again.
So in the U.S., I've been speaking and working with Teddy Cruz, and often in the U.S., as I am sure it has been in Bogota, cultural and governmental institutions are very, let's say, resistant to accept these kinds of gestures. Maybe on the level of the individual, it seems more easy. One, do you see that approach being applicable in the U.S.? And two, how specifically were you able to use these kinds of gestures on the level of institutions, where often these kinds of protocols are unacceptable, they're viewed with suspicion?
In any place of the world, there are codes of behavior, and they are very linked to identity. So if I ask a general that he puts lipstick on his lips, even if it's Halloween night, he can answer, like it happened to me, that if he had not uniform, he would paint his lips. Having the uniform and the lips painted seemed to him too much. So I asked to dress with something related with his job, and he dressed as a prisoner. The social department woman dressed as a prostitute. Alicia Eugenia Silva dressed as a nun. And it was the perfect disguise for her. I disguised it as a strange monk with a very forceful colors.
Is this role playing? Like, how would you describe this again?
Well, it's Halloween night. Children are disguised. So we think, let's walk through the main cities avenue from the mayor's house to the Modern Art Museum. The Modern Art Museum, by chance, was inaugurating that night the Bogota Biennale.
Uh-huh.
And so I have a photo of I'm absolutely happy. My wife is dressed as Super Civico. And
you were dressed how? You were a Superman, or how were you dressed?
No, I was dressed as a monk.
As a monk, okay.
As a monk with a scarf, plenty of colors. Well, that night we danced with some radical Cuban music. That was a strange beginning of the night. Llegó el comandante y mandó a parar. Classic post-Cuban revolution. So I was aware that it was a little bit strange that Mayor's house has seen the main team dancing. De tu querida presencia, comandante Che Guevara. That meant that in the 70s, some of us were sympathizing with leftist ideologies. But nobody made any comment. We go from the mayor's house through the Septima to the Modern Art Museum.
Begin with the political and move to the cultural.
Yes, but in the political, there is this strange dissociation between the letters of the songs. In that moment, we have a non-Marxist agenda, very clearly. We allow us to dance with a music that in other moments was emotionally strongly felt. But we walk with the people, and the people, they understand. One of the things when you break codes is that people very quickly identify you as a code breaker, and they expect, and now what? And journalists also played that role. Sometimes I was exhausted. I was saying, this week or these 2 weeks, there will be no novelty. We walk through the street and we enter in the museum. Well, the art museum is for me like a church, like a cathedral. And entering in it, dressed as we were, was a sort of sacrilege or playful thing. It was a strange thing. Rubén Jaramillo, one of the philosophy teacher, is very respectable in his appearance. Mm-hmm. And he entered one day in the Modern Art Museum, in the same museum, with a bird in a cage. Mm-hmm. And he put it in a corner of the museum. And for that man, that was a sort of a realized dream. Well, with the very elementary sociological definition that work of art is something that has gone through the doors of a museum. By going to the Modern Art Museum, we had another realization. Mm-hmm. Then when I go to the bars with the clock, that all this on the same night, you have another very different from police enforcement. It's the mayor and his team working for bars to be closed at 1 o'clock personally. We were checking also if police was doing well its job by demand of the chief of police. With my clock, with my disguise, it was a very strange image of authority. The authority was displaced from the role, from the person, from the rituals. And I was trying to communicate your life is sacred, your life matters to me. A young adult was arguing strongly with me why I was interfering with his plans, with the idea that anybody can do with his life what he wants. Well, by contrast, the first minister of Uribe, Londoño, said, I agree with you, the main thing is the duties. We have to make processes for citizens accepting to do their duty. But his way of doing this was just writing a legal text saying the duties are activated or enacted. Colombia has a strong tradition of faith in law and faith in action. Bolívar, faith in action, and Santander, faith in laws. When the two have worked well together, the country has advanced a lot. But usually there are tensions. The more legalist Colombia stops the action-oriented other half of Colombia.
Can we go back to that question before? I want you to speak more to it about the question of the institution. I had asked you how you negotiated kind of resistance on the part maybe of institutions to these kinds of gestures, and your answer had suggested that you approached the institution on the level of the individual, right? You had talked about, for instance, on Halloween, asking a general to dress up in a different
way.
So is it to say that you approach the institution as a community of individuals and never as an abstract formation?
No, in some sense, at the contrary. I try to be very respectful of written rules, and we shared in the team many hours interpreting legal texts, saying this means exactly this. And that was a Lyotard recommendation. Lyotard came to Bogota, we met, and he said, the more violence you have, the more you have to grasp to form. You carry with you your subjectivity, your human side, but the political, the management are very impersonal. One engineer was in my team in university, and he was drawing a caricature where I was walking on una cuerda floja,
the high wire.
And I was saying cero piruetas, zero. And I think that the two, there is almost always a way of relating general principles with everyday life and with concrete situations. One day I was explaining to my team, my first function was policing the functioning of the team. And I asked the general secretary to conduct the meeting, and I was with a whistling very clearly the faults to communication process. For example, two of the members of the team whisper. I came and by surprise, I whistled very close to the ears, so they felt aggressive. But my theory, and I could be criticized, obviously, but my idea was if we communicate well inside the team, the results will be for all the city. It's a sort of magic. In a certain moment I said, the only thing we must care of is our communication between us, not between the government and the city. We have inside the group sufficient.
It's common language or no?
It's a common language. It's shared objectives. It's a sort of channel for having specialized knowledge, and it's not losing time by competition. I use very frequently a linguistic sort of small trick. I forbid to speak we think that we is very limited. So I said, let's say algunos de nosotros, some of us, we think that and that. So if someone said us, I said no, some of us, allowing the us only for the 8 million city. Well, I had read some book in socialist countries. People were experts in reconstructing what meant us, they, sort of encrypted language for resisting authoritarian regimes. So it was a cool thing to say, remember that your us is just part of the us.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of, if you were to draw a picture of what kind of leadership this was, I mean, you were accused of being a clown, often a mayor thought of as very vertical. Like, what would be the metaphor by which to understand the power relation that you were constructing as mayor? Was it a horizontal one? Was it a collective
one?
How do you put your mind around? How does somebody who wasn't in Bogota like wrap their mind around what kind of leadership model it was?
I felt that I was teaching instrumental rationality. The mayor's office has to make plans and to make expenses and collect money and things that we cannot say as in university, let's take 2 years more or 3 years more to achieve well a project. So I spend a lot of time on objectives, chronograms, and analysis of means and goals. I felt it like a sort of redemption of many years working against instrumental rationality and now condemned to teach it. That was clearly an obligation. And in some sense, only when you warranted a minima in very elementary rationality, then you can build on it. A lot of people were addressing letters about how to arrange very easily traffic in the city. Well, all Bogotanos are frustrated engineers with traffic. So I was disappointed because I could not have time and enough time to analyze all these proposals. And we had to contract some engineers, especially for reading common citizens' proposals. I made a laboratory of my own behavior to understand better the difficulties for others. For example, saving water was not easy.
So you went on television working through that in a way that the public could understand.
Yes. Yeah. My friend's Raúl Barragán theory was that when television had no team or even journals, they went to the mayor's house and they got something.
When you became mayor, did you retain the individuals that had previously been in the positions?
Very few. Well, my first team as mayor was very strongly based on university professors. These are people with a very high morality, but they are slow. Perhaps they take too much care.
They're like naive as to how to operationalize the ideas?
Yes, and especially they want to have 1 week or 2 weeks more for the last revision. Okay. I remember the first decision that we took in the board of the energy company. Raúl Barragán was on the same board. And he explained to me in private sector, there is even more sensitivity to rhythm, and many decisions are taken with incomplete information. And to complete information takes time or takes money. Normally it takes both time and money. You make a sort of faith act. Strangely, in pedagogical realm, I was taking risks. I have not found many mayors taking so much risks. But on the management, I was afraid. We had to collect, for saving the electricity company, we had to find some private investors, and we needed them to offer at least $1,000 million. And we got $2,200. At a certain moment, it seemed impossible to get $1,000. When we met $2,200, it was in part because we had taken very seriously all the investment bank recommendations. So transparency, chamber, never speaking alone with one of the proposers of the bidders, making always inclusive meeting of all the bidders to explain things about the bidding, explaining to people what you are doing, why you are doing.
Mm-hmm. Doris Sumner, I noticed in your essay on expanding political, you invoked her and bilingualism. If I understood correctly, your argument, my Spanish is rudimentary, that often we think that membership in a group or a tradition is monologic, like you could only belong in one way, but in fact there's a possibility of being a member not just in a singular way, but in multiple and hybrid ways, is that correct?
Yes.
Could you talk about that and why that's so important to you, and as mayor, how you were thinking about this kind of multiplication of the ways people identify?
When you come from the theory of Carl Schmitt, you have your identity very clearly defined, and an opposite identity, the enemy. And that describes perhaps well some moments of human history and some moments of life of individuals. You can get obsessed by one enemy. Today you have more partial enmities. You have the dynamics, so the enemy of yesterday can be your friend today. My mother suffered from Russians and from Nazis. Her most beloved professor was killed by Nazis, and her father was deported to Siberia by the Russians. So she had made resistance against both. It was not formatted. It was not a binary word. It was more, a lot more complex.
Suggested elsewhere that art has the potential to sensitize. So art would be maybe one mechanism or one way to encourage this kind of sensitization to other ways of thinking and other ways of identifying and belonging. Is that would that be a correct way to understand how this discussion of hybridity in terms of membership connects back to the use of culture as mayor in encouraging civic imagination, civic participation, a sense of belonging more generally across divided constituencies?
To some extent, I oversimplify and I think about citizens who have rights and who have duties and who have language. And I think part of the Colombian violence is just having not enough language. It's because of lack of expressions. The fourth objective of Cultura Ciudadana program was enhance expression and interpretation through culture, recreation, sports, and the arts. It's not the main explanation of violence, but it's one of the sides. If you can kill me with words, perhaps you will yourself prefer to kill me with words. Hay miradas que matan. Eyes with your eyes.
There's a symbolic violence to language.
Yes. In my office there was a box bag. There was written, before bad thinking, discharge yourself. And I remember Carmenza Saldías saying, I'm going to think badly about our rivals, but I go and I hit two or three times the bag. She did that. Well, there are two other principles, perhaps taken from art. One is what you say with your body is stronger. So allow yourself to move around. We used to play trust exercises by balancing you with your eyes closed. And it's a very clear connection between trust and pleasure.
You did this as mayor?
No, I did it as candidate for presidency, for the second mayors, and I also used the laces as rector, asking students and deans to sit, one student, one dean. I have a photograph as rector, laying down on the floor, and 10 secretaries putting their shoes on my body.
This was as rector of the university?
Yes. Another thing was reading in my body a sort of group tensions. Self-observation helped it a lot.
So how would you explain this conception of power? It's not about evasion or about play? Like, what is the metaphor, the word that you would use to describe your relationship to power?
There is an article in Gaceta de Colcultura, Poderes, poder/es. It means many powers, the beginning perhaps vaguely inspired in Foucault, the very simple idea that there are several powers.
Never this one.
Not one. The person who dances very well has a power. If you dance well, that can open a lot of doors. The main idea of power that I used for many years is boundary. Bernstein uses power in that sense, classification. Bernstein accuses Foucault of looking only on discipline, looking on behaviors, on the boundaries of legitimate behaviors. But for Bernstein, there are other boundaries, space boundaries, social categories, gender boundaries. And when the boundary is strong, the power expresses itself by incommunicating, by isolating, by fragmenting. So the contrary is weak classification. Bernstein's one article is beautiful about restrooms. There are new middle class restrooms where the door doesn't close well, where people continue a conversation through the door, something that would be absolutely unacceptable in classic family, where the door closes well. And in the museum, it's incredibly strong sound isolation. You have two or three almost hermetical doors that close automatically with strong mechanisms in such a way that there is 100% warranty that what happens in one place will not be heard in another place. Mary Douglas also worked on British anthropologists. She worked with Basil Bernstein on that idea of strong classification. In education, you have strong classifications when you have girls and boys in different courses, very strict rules. Normally, professors also have a higher place in the classroom. Myself, I was doing reportage for television with a very old priest in Popayan. And he said people today like to speak horizontally and that people demand horizontality. Well, Bernstein's idea is that new middle class teachers, psychiatrists, also artists, and they are prepared for weakening classification. At surface level, it seems that the little boy and the little girl can do what he wants. Well, for the old middle class, it's a tragedy that the sun goes up on the dining table. For the new middle class, it's a tragedy if not. To some extent, Bernstein thinks that what he calls framing can replace power. You can have a sort of collective strong delimitation of behaviors without making it stand on strong classification. In strong classification, gender prejudices, ethnic prejudices are a basis of the behavior. There is a sort of message, we are not equals, we have to maintain boundaries. Weakening boundaries is dangerous. In new middle class, things are a lot more flexible and less visible.
As mayor, you were trying to enable a public discussion of interest and of emotion?
Yes, but to some extent, I was overvaluing reasons. I was discovering in a more performative way emotions. I think, for example, vote is mainly an emotional decision. And emotions help reasons many times. Emotion is needed for making what is rational to make. Very deeply rooted in every human being, there are very close emotions. Humans can grasp the force of arguments, but also most of humanity can feel almost the same emotions. For many questions, stressing universality is very important. There are trends in almost all the countries, the nationality operates as stronger than the citizenship. Well, one of my dreams is having the constitution instead of the flag, or the constitution as the flag.
Could you speak briefly again about citizenship, specifically in the context of being mayor?
Okay.
What did citizenship mean in that moment?
Okay. We are not born citizens. We learn to be citizens. Learning to be citizen is like learning language. You have to be treated as a citizen, to become, you have to have your own actions interpreted in a way that make them actions of a citizen. It's typically just by performing that you become citizen. It's like language. Nobody is from birth speaking. The shortest definition of citizenship is Hannah Arendt's, the right to have rights. Human beings, we have the right to have rights. So you are citizens because your rights are entrenched in laws. So law obedience is very important for citizenship. The first approach is obey the laws, not by fear of legal sanctions, but by other mechanisms, moral approval of laws or of legal obligations, and social approval of legal obligations. If the law says pay your taxes, it's very important. It makes easier to collect the tax that people understand why taxes are paid and invested in welfare of the weakest and invested in collective infrastructure, progress of all. The main idea is that culture shapes more your behavior than law. And if the culture goes against law, you have a tragedy. You can invest a lot in police, in law enforcement. Culture takes the power. Culture is stronger than law. But if you have law, personal morals and culture forbidding to kill, for example, if the three voices speak the same thing, if they are in harmony, you can be rather sure that there will be little murder. Mm. The most important thing is weakening the moral or the cultural approval of illegal behavior. And that comes in part from outside, as social control, as social rejection of certain behaviors, but in part comes from inside, from moral inhibition. People feel guilty or imagine the guilt they could feel. Having low morals and culture working together makes you a citizen. In a very elementary image, I was saying from 94 that each of us has a little bad guy inside, or almost all. Or as much as I know humanity, we have a little bad guy inside. And the first responsible of controlling that bad guy is yourself, is your morals. If your morals fail, there is interaction with others. And other people can intervene, can reject your behavior, can try to explain you why it's not desirable and so on. And if self-control and mutual control doesn't work, in that case, sorry, police and justice have to intervene. But social order cannot be based on police and on justice. Police and justice are the last resort. And normally, almost all human beings behave well because of culture and because of morals. And morals and culture make sort of feedback one to the other, in part through arts. Arts liberated to some extent from the obligation of truth can work on the obligation of correctness and on sincerity.
So would you say then that as mayor you were trying to, if there was maybe one defining aspect to your method, it would be this attempt to harmonize?
Yes.
Law, morality, culture?
Yes. Accepting that in some matters there are silences, but in the main things like not killing, not robbing, you have the need of the three systems being coordinated. And if your guilt mechanisms get neutralized by some kind of argument, or fear of social rejection, or the force of the social recognition could correct your behavior. And it's, for human freedom, it's very important that there are three differentiated systems. if you collapse, you make only one system, it would be integrism, it would be a very closed system. So it's interesting that there is a person who doesn't kill because he will feel very guilty. Another person doesn't kill because he would have fear of prison. Another person because of social rejection and so on. Well, a little bit like Rawls' theory of translapping consensus. It's better that people have different reasons for obeying the same rules, but we need the same rules.